This hour is brought to you by Yuengling Traditional Lager, oldest brewery in America.
It's time for 5 on. Leila Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Number 1.
On Monday's edition of FS1's The Herd, host Colin Cowherd shared this theory on Bears coach Ben Johnson sitting quarterback Caleb Williams in the preseason opener against the Dolphins on Sunday.
It's okay if you don't want to play Caleb Williams, but I do think it was a little strategic. Burrow played, Mahomes played, Spencer Rattler played, everybody but Tom Brady played. Like, the whole world played this weekend, and it was almost like he was saying, you know, he's not quite there. I don't need another week of heat from the Chicago media. He took a lot of snaps in practice. It felt a little strategic, did it not?
What are your thoughts on this theory from Colin Cowherd as heard there on FS1?
Okay, here's the thing. I did like the Tom Brady reference. I thought it was funny. But we're not the reason Caleb Williams didn't play. And isn't your first thought always when the starters are resting that they're probably not ready? That's my first thought every time. You know what I'm going to do if I think something's not ready and I have the option to do something else? I'm doing the thing that is ready that's something else. That's how that works. It's a logical thought process. Does it mean that we're mad at the Bears for it? No. Did we deal with an offense that wasn't ready for the last 2 years? Yes. So, okay, what's another preseason game if that's the case?
Listen, I'm not saying that Colin isn't onto something here, but I don't think that Ben Johnson is worried about what we think about what he's doing. I think he's just doing what he wants to do. He doesn't like to play quarterbacks in the preseason. The evidence is all there. I mentioned earlier in the show, 10 preseason snaps for Jared Goff, his first year as offensive coordinator in the preseason. And Goff had to basically say, I need to have this time with my offensive line to get those 10 preseason snaps. I also think they're not ready. I think that is true.
Why is that a problem?
Yeah, I think that's just the reality of dealing with a quarterback learning a first-time system under a new head coach.
This offense wasn't ready for years.
Yeah, that's not...
I'm still waiting for Matt Nagy's offense.
Welcome to Chicago. Welcome to Chicago. So the answer to the question is, no, I don't think he's worried about anything about what we're doing as the media. I think he will put Caleb Williams out there when he feels like it. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if that means he'll do it in the preseason at all.
Would you say it would happen in a fortnight? We're getting there, guys. We're getting there.
I don't think it's happening in preseason game number 3. I think this is the time. If it's going to happen, it's going to be preseason game number 2 against the Bills.
When he said, like, afraid of the media, my immediate thought in my head was just, like, Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams see Mark Grody, and they're like, ah! Boo! like they're just terrified of Grody marching on down.
Grody and his Bears credential pick that he was so proud of, where he's using skincare.
Like, Mark Potash isn't on the beat anymore. There's no one there to truly spark fear in any of these people.
So who do we think that Colin Cowherd is afraid of? Is that what we're trying to figure out?
Jason Leisure.
Who in the Chicago media is Colin Cowherd's nemesis?
Chris Emma.
It's definitely Chris Emma.
It's definitely Chris Emma. If all else goes, what is it? Some people like Chris Emma? Is that the...
That's and the others, they fear him.
Now we know who doesn't like him. It's Ben Johnson, apparently.
Poor Emma. He just gets back to work one day and is like, Colin Cowherd's mad at me.
To be fair, I love Chris Emma, so bring him on.
Number 2.
Poor Chris Emma.
Bears offensive coordinator Declan Doyle says the left tackle position is, quote, wide open. I think it's time for a dollar bet. Layla, Marshall, Ray, me, Robbie. Who is your pick to be the Bears' week 1 starting left tackle?
Well, if the streets have taught me anything, it's that I have a dollar to give this bet. So,
literally the streets. Literally, I just want to point that out. Literally the streets.
Yeah. No, as for the other streets, as for the other streets, that's not really my area, would you say? I go outside and stuff, but I'm mainly on the sidewalk.
Yeah, sidewalk. I'm a sidewalk guy.
In fact, yeah, maybe I'm also in that little courtyard off of the sidewalk, but I'm outside. Okay, so all of that said, I have a dollar to work with here because the street gave me a dollar the other day and I used it to pay Robbie. But it's still, to me, the obvious choice is the guy who started today at left tackle. It's Braxton Jones. Because as Brad Biggs told us on the morning show today, and I love hearing Brad Biggs' sports thoughts as he talks football with us.
Who?
Yes. That he proceeded to paint this picture about how do you really want a rookie left tackle to start on Monday night against the Vikings in a Brian Flores heavy offense or defense that calls a lot of blitzes and throws a lot of various looks at you. And that would be a bad situation to put a rookie left tackle in, would it not? And then I was like, wait, are you talking about Kron Amagaji, which is what happened last year? Or are you talking about Ozzie Trapillo? So, that said, Braxton Jones, Bears.
Can I just say not Kron Amagaji? Is that, will that get me a dollar from each of you?
If
I
no,
just,
that will not.
Oh, I got to
narrow
it down.
I can look outside and see.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm not, we're not.
Street, do you have a dollar for this bet?
No, I'm not taking your dollar off the street. It's got to be a clean, crisp, from the bank dollar.
The day that I walk past money on the street.
Unmarked bills.
I am rich.
Yeah, I think you're already rich. That's what I'm hearing right now. Listen, if we were doing this and it was week 17, I would say Ozzie Trapillo. But since it is week one, I'm going to go with Braxton Jones. But if it was week 17, I think at some point, Ozzie Trapillo supplants Braxton Jones at left tackle during this season.
And for those of you saying I have a knack for finding things on the street, that's what happens when you're short. You're closer to the ground. It's easier to see stuff down there. I see all sorts of stuff.
I'm going to be bold. Give me Ozzie Trapillo. I want him. I think he's going to be great. I think he has a bright future. I've liked everything I've heard from him. I also want your guys' dollars, so give me Ozzie Trapillo.
I'll find it later.
All right, Ray.
I'm leaning towards Braxton Jones, so I'm in the Braxton Jones camp. I just, you know, I'm with you, Marshall. I'd like to see the emergence of Ozzie Trapillo at some point, but I don't think it's going to be week one as a starter.
He just seems so responsible, though. He really does. I would trust him with, like, I don't know, a pet to take care of or my bank account or something. He's that trustworthy.
He would feed the goldfish every day. Robbie, so you're either going to get a dollar out of all three of us or you're going to owe each of us a dollar.
Correct.
You understand
so
that,
I either
right?
get $3 or give $3.
Yep. I like this.
Me is against
this,
the world.
Is Giddy. This you hedging? Yes. Is this you hedging your bet against the Josh Giddy news?
I'm just me against the world. I'm just, I don't know. They zig, I zag.
Five it's on it. Zapillo.
Number three.
Robbie has ended that question. He played the sounder.
That's
Robbie
right.
has spoken.
Robbie has spoken, and this is 5 on it on 670 The Score with Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris. And we move on to question number 3, which is, which slumping Cubs hitter do you think has the best shot at turning things around in Toronto?
Until the odds tell me differently, and they still tell me he's due, it's Kyle Tucker. The resume outweighs the length of time, which for me feels like infinity. But the numbers say otherwise. So until that's the case, he still has not got an entire calendar month without hitting a home run. I still think it's Kyle Tucker. Now, I know that that's a bit of a lazy take when you consider what's going on in front of us. But to me, that resume matters. The back of the baseball card matters. He's still the guy who the numbers say most likely is the one to break out of this.
Okay, so when we say break out of the slump, are we saying getting back to their career numbers?
I'm saying how about you just produce in any way, shape, or form, damn it, Cubs.
Well, I mean, he's been doing some of that.
He has been doing some of that, but it's not...
It's not the power.
Yes, exactly. It's a power outage.
Okay, so what would be getting out of the slump for Ian Happ? Because that's where I'm leaning right now, but I want to make sure I have this defined clearly.
Oh, I was reading about this earlier today.
What would that mean? Would that mean he gets his batting average back up to .246, which is
I'll
his
take
career
that.
Average? Does that mean he gets his on-base percentage up to .341, which
I'll,
is his career average?
I'll take
average?
That. I think me as a Cubs fan, I'm going to take anything that is better than what we've had. So, Marshall, I will take any positive, you know, and anything that the Cubs can do at the plate that will lead to scoring runs.
I'm going to go Ian Happ, and here's why. Kyle Tucker, the aforementioned, is already in his neighborhood when it comes to on-base percentage. I'm not confident he's getting back to the slug that he's had in the course of his career.
The bat speed.
But he could still be productive as a guy who doesn't get back to his career average in the slugging department. Ian Happ, meanwhile, I think a couple of good weeks, and he's back there Remember, he's got 16 home runs. And we all agree Ian Happ is slumping, right? But he still has 16 home runs. He still has an on-base percentage of 325, which is only 16 points under what his on-base percentage for his career is at 341. So I like Ian Happ's chances to get back to, say, a 114 OPS plus. He's at 108 right now. All it's going to take is Ian Happ's BABIP going up a little bit back towards the league average, and Ian Happ's going to be right back playing gold glove defense and providing good on-base percentage with occasional pop in the order.
No, you're right. Like, his profile dictates that he is not the farthest off of what he typically does.
Right. So that's why I'm going with Ian Happ.
Number four.
This morning, ESPN released an in-season update to its rankings of the top 50 players in baseball. Cubs outfielder Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA, was ranked at number 7 overall, and outfielder Kyle Tucker was ranked at number 11 overall. What are your thoughts on where PCA and Tucker fell on this list?
Okay, the only way this list makes sense is because it's this season. But unfortunately, I still think it is too high for Pete Crow Armstrong because, frankly, we know what he's been doing hitting-wise as well. And especially against lefties, it's been a struggle. So because of that, and because of even recent events where Justin Turner is pinch-hitting for him late in a game, even though he's batting cleanup in that example, I think you can't do that in the top 10, right? Like, that scenario can't come up if you're a top 10 player in baseball, even for the season. So because of that, I think he got ranked a little high. The other thing is, it's ahead of Jose Ramirez, who I know is not the same guy who we've seen for the past few years. But keep in mind, the Guardians got to the ALCS last year. Jose Ramirez is always a threat at the plate. Consistently, you know something is going to happen. And he's got a 4.9 WAR. So given all those things, I still think even Jose Ramirez is probably ahead of PCA on this list.
You know what? I had to look long and hard at this because I was like, all right, PCA's having a pretty good season, even with the fact that in his last 75 at-bats, he has struck out 25 times. Let me run that back.
What?
In his last 75 at-bats, he has walked twice and struck out 25 times.
It can't be number 7.
Oh.
Can't be number 7 then.
Oh, is that too cold and hard of a fact?
That is the ratio, 25 to 2.
Oh my God. There was a time where we thought 25% like strikeout rate was awful.
But here's the thing. I'm keeping PCA at 7. You know why? Layla's looking at me right now. If you're on the Twitch, I mean, I encourage
Garrett
you to go.
Garrett Crochet's number 10 on this list. Who's winning the AL Cy Young?
Scooble.
Okay.
Very funny.
This is about the entire season. Despite what I just said about Pete Crow Armstrong, he still has a 6 WAR. That leads the National League. So I got no problem with him being at number 7. He's going through a slump right now. But I don't think it's a big enough slump to knock him out of the top 10.
Kyle Schwarber is number 14 on this list.
Now, his placement is erroneous.
He has 42 home runs.
His placement is quite erroneous.
What would we do to have Kyle Schwarber on the team right now?
Well, here's the question nobody wants to ask. Would you rather have Kyle Schwarber or Kyle Tucker? Which Kyle would you rather have?
Kyle Schwarber. What is probably not going to make $500 million, and you could have had him for, eight. And, well,
one of those players
he could have probably also been the one game difference maker to get to the playoffs in 2023.
Well, I'll just say this. Now that he can hit left-handed pitching effectively with his battle armor, he's probably hitting 500 home runs for his career. I know that's tough to swallow, but he's probably hitting 500 home runs for his career, Kyle Schwarber. That's crazy.
So I question the list. That's basically...
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, but I have no problem with PCA's placement at number 7.
By the way, since I'm here, number 1 is Aaron Judge. Number 2 is Shohei Ohtani. Mixed it up there, guys. Number 3 is Tarek Skubal. Okay, probably now the Cy Young favorite in the AL.
He's a beast.
He was always the fights. When was he not?
No, Garrett Crochet was for most of the time, like most of the offseason and into like the first couple months of this year at least. Cal Raleigh, number 4, Bobby Witt Jr., Paul Skeens, and then PCA.
Yeah, Skeens should be higher.
Number five.
All right, the last question on Five On It on the Score with Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris. On Tuesday, Monday, Bears linebacker Noah Sewell talked about the change in his diet and said this when he was asked if there's a food item he misses right now.
M&M's. Miss the M&M's. Yeah, that's about it.
What's the most difficult item you've had to give up for dietary reasons?
Oh, the M&M's is such a valid point because of the chocolate, but it's so good.
Do we get a follow-up on like what type of an M&M's?
No, you know,
there's so many types of M&M's now.
No follow-up on the M&M's. It was just moving on. It was more about, you know, what he's been doing physically. That was more of the focus.
Well, peanut on M&M's are the best M&M.
What? No. Nope. No, they're not. Peanut butter M&M's are the elite M&M.
And so it begins. That's what I did. I just lay the grenade out there and let you guys react.
It was very Mark Grody of you.
Yeah, you know, I do what I can. That's my guy.
You're a provocateur.
Provocateur. But that's something that Mark Grody and myself have in common. We are provocateurs.
You're more deliberate in your actions.
I am.
After knowing you too well.
I'm not subtle with it.
No, like you'll lead in and smile. Like you communicate what you're doing, your intent. Grody's like, I don't know, did I just do that?
Yeah, he's a Pat Murphy guy. He's an all shucks guy.
Yeah, Grody's like, oh yeah, I just have this pancake in my pocket. Psych, it's a grenade. His name is Andrew Vaughn. Bye.
Bears.
So what's the most difficult item you've ever had to give up for dietary reasons?
Wait, what's the elite M&M? You don't get out of this.
The elite M&M... I like the... I tell you one I don't like. The pretzel one.
No, that doesn't count. Right. You have to say which one you like the best. The pretzel one is good.
I like the pretzel one. Yeah.
I'm okay with the pretzel one. I have my vote.
I think I'm a peanut butter M&M guy.
Yes.
I think I'm a peanut butter M&M
guy. Ray?
That was my vote as well. Peanut butter M&Ms, baby. I love peanut M&Ms too, but peanut butter is way better.
So what's the... have a Reese's Pieces. Reese's Pieces?
I love Reese's Pieces. Reese's.
Those are also delicious, Reese's, but go ahead. What's the item?
For me, I am lucky that I don't have to have a lot of restrictions, right? Like, I don't have to give up anything, which is kind of great, so... That said, I think the hardest thing for me to give up at any given time, I just can't have them in the house, Wheat Thins.
What?
Oh my gosh. Wheat Thins are it for me. It's like this, they have like the slightest little bit of sweetness. They're just impossible for me to keep in the house. I have to like count them out so that way I don't mindlessly eat them all. Wheat Thins.
Okay, for me.
But I feel like those are good for you.
No, not at the rate I eat them. No, nothing is. No.
For me, it's the sugar bombs known as cereal, straight up, just cereal.
Oh, I love like snacking on cereal.
Once you learn what cereal really is, once you get past your Saturday morning cartoon days and understand that cereal is just diabetes in carb form.
Oh no! What about Grape Nuts? I like Grape Nuts. I'm the one person. Eh. Yes, I am that person.
But I was eating Apple Jacks and I was eating Frosted Flakes and I was eating all the things. Like what do you mean?
Super sugar.
Six-year-olds do not eat Grape Nuts. Okay, 6 year olds eat the most sugary thing they can find.
I think I was eating Raisin Bran at that time. My mom didn't want
what
us to have
child
sugar.
Were you?
My mom. I mean, I ate stuff. My mom was pretty. For whatever reason, sugary cereals was a thing for her.
But yeah, okay. I gave up cereal and I never looked back.
So what's the one cereal though, if you're stuck on a desert island and it's like, hey, there's this box of cereal, what's the one you're hoping
for? Apple Jacks.
For? Okay, it is.
It's Apple Jacks.
That's the choice?
Oh, wow. Now I'm getting killed off of Apple Jacks. Okay.
Cracklin' Oat Bran, man.
What are you talking about? You can't.
What the hell?
You can't come at me Apple Jacks and your answer be crack. I remember.
Do you
my
even
parents,
know about that cereal?
Yes, because my parents used to eat it.
I eat really responsible cereals. I don't know.
Clearly.
Clearly, flavor
Special
is
K
not a priority.
With strawberries is the crack. It is the best cereal. The best.
Plain you Special healthy, K is also amazing.
You healthy children.
He's
get out
healthy.
Of my face.
It's even better
do I look
flakes.
Healthy to you? No.
I was going to go. Hey, I was going to kick it old school and go with Cookie Crisp, baby. That was a classic.
Literal mini chocolate chip cookies in cereal.
That's it.
I say this yelling at Marshall with homemade chia pudding with coconut milk and banana.
She's very healthy, her adult version of herself, just like her child version of herself.
No. I eat sugar.
No!
Yeah.
The conversation stopped after Cracklin' Oat Bran was brought up voluntarily.
Portion size is kind of a big deal in this.
Oh my goodness. Okay. We got more Cubs talk on the way.
Yeah, we do.
Megan Montemurro. She's a Cubs beat writer for the Tribune. She joins us next, Rahimi and Harris, on 670 The Score and the Odyssey and iHeart radio apps.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You know, we didn't create, you know, enough scoring opportunities tonight. And then, so, you know, we only had a couple, we had two chances essentially to get the big hit, and it didn't happen. And on a night when you don't score enough, you know, you got to be perfect.
That was Craig Counsell talking about the Cubs' lack of scoring opportunities in their most recent game. That was the loss on Sunday Night Baseball to the St. Louis Cardinals. Now let's go live out to our Circa Resort and Casino hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. To Toronto, that's where we find Cubs beat writer for the Tribune, Megan Montemurro. Megan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good, Megan. How are things north of the border?
It's about to be thunderstormy, but otherwise good.
Good thing they play indoors. Good thing they play indoors. Megan, how big is this series for the Cubs? I mean, be real with us.
I mean, I think it's big in the sense of they really need in this next week before those five games against the Brewers at Wrigley to get on a roll. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're the Cubs, you really can't worry about what the Brewers are doing right now. They're just on such a supernova streak at the moment. But you want to at least still give yourself a chance in the division. And more importantly, want to get one of those top two best records in the National League so you can get a bye. And so I think it's important from the sense of just like building positive momentum, you know, because a lot of teams in the NL are kind of struggling right now when you look at some of the other divisions and the playoff contenders. So I think there's an opportunity here, and it's going to be tough against a good Blue Jays team, but they have a chance here to try and, you know, get some traction, especially on the offensive side.
Yeah, Megan, how would you describe what you've seen out of this Cubs offense going back? You can even, I think, go as far as back to the 500 month of June, but especially since the All-Star break. How would you describe what you've seen out of this team at the plate?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the reverse of what the first 2 to 3 months were. You know, during that stretch, it seemed like everybody top to bottom in the lineup was clicking and firing on all cylinders, and everyone was hot at the same time. And now it feels like the reverse, where it's just outside of maybe Matt Shaw, you know, there really has not been consistency from the group. And obviously, you know, it really starts with the top four hitters in the lineup. And, you know, when you're not getting that regular production from your Kyle Tuckers, Pete Armstrong, Michael Bush, Say Suzuki, it's just going to make things so much harder for the rest of the group. And the margin for error for the pitching staff is just so slim right now. And I mean, I think it's being overlooked really how well the rotation has pitched really the last 4 to 6 weeks. But the offensive struggles is just making so few mistakes possible for that staff.
Megan Montemurro, the Cubs beat writer for the Tribune, joining us here on Rahimi and Harris. It's a simple question, Megan. How hurt or unhurt is Kyle Tucker right now?
I mean, I think obviously that's the big question. I mean, when we talked to him a few days ago, you know, he basically was like, you get banged up over the course of the season. And, you know, he didn't seem to put a whole lot of stock in the idea that his finger that he jammed on a slide in June was still bothering him or impacting him. And he said it would be hard to quantify even before then, you know, what the exact impact had been. But, I mean, clearly when you look at some of the numbers, he's just not creating great contact. He's hitting the ball on the ground way too much as a fly ball hitter. And, you know, he really put it down to the fact that he's just missing his hittable pitches, that he's following them off instead of doing damage on them. And he's still seeing the ball great because, I mean, his on-base percentage during this stretch is almost 400. And, you know, he still has a low strikeout rate. So he's identifying the right pitches to swing at and attack, but he's just a hair off. And so you're seeing a lot of that weaker contact, ball on the ground. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously, there's some underlying metrics with the bat speed that's concerning with the dip that he's had lately. But for Tucker, I mean, obviously, it's not bothering him enough that an IL stint has been warranted to this point. So, you know, they just have to hope that by continuing to see the ball well and identify what he should be swinging at, that at some point soon it'll start to turn. He's too good of a hitter.
Megan, I'm glad you brought up also the interview and discussion that Kyle Tucker had with the media, because he was very matter of fact about things, but I don't feel like we got a confirmed yes or no when it came to whether or not he was actually injured. And I say this because I keep going back to the fact of, not only was that the case when he talked to the media, but also mm-hmm. he played in the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, and at this point in the season, you know, as most players will say, you know, most are potentially dealing with something or banged up or just worn down at this point in the season, you know, with about 6 weeks to go. So, you know, I do think, yeah, the fact that it wasn't necessarily an outright no, my finger's 100% fine. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot to be said and what's not said. But obviously, you know, from the team perspective and obviously his perspective, if it's not something that's, you know, serious enough to require an IL stint, I mean, you know, he's still getting on base. And so I think his struggles wouldn't be as noticeable if it weren't, you know, for the guys around him in the lineup too, also not hitting.
Megan, I'm looking at what's going on with the rest of the National League. You kind of mentioned that no one's really taking off except for that one team that happens to be in the Cubs division that's taken off in the Brewers. Do you feel like the Central is still within reach, or do you feel like they're just trying to hold on to a top wild card spot based on how many games they have left and how many games they have left against Milwaukee?
I mean, I think there's still enough of the season left that you can't say it's out of reach, especially because they still play five times next week in 4 days. Obviously, if that doesn't go well and they're more like nine games back heading into the final week or so of August, you know, maybe that perception changes. But I mean, generally speaking, when you look at the playoff contenders in the National League, I mean, it's fairly bunched up and there's a lot of incentive to get one of those top two buys. So as long as that's potentially in play, I mean, you know, if you're the Cubs, you obviously you can't look too far ahead, and you have to just, you know, as they like to say, the cliche of take it one day at a time. But, you know, I don't think it's anything that you obviously punt on. It's too bunched in the middle. It's taken the Brewers an incredibly hot streak over the last 2 months to get to this point. So I think if you're the Cubs, you just keep worrying about yourselves and do what you need to do and keep, and, you know, try and get back to winning series. I mean, they still haven't been swept in a series of at least three games this year. So, you know, I think for them it's just try and win each series and see where you are in a month.
Megan Montemurro is on the phone with us. She is the Cubs beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us from Toronto. Jose Barrios getting the start for the mound for the Blue Jays on the mound tonight. He gave up 3 earned runs in his last start. What do you think is the opportunity for the Cubs to take game one of the series?
I think it's just going to be, you know, you hope that the off day gives you kind of that mental reset. And I think for the Cubs, it's just they really just have to get back to what they do well. You know, like for a guy like Michael Busch, it's reestablishing his approach and not chasing. Like his strikeout rate has really spiked. You know, you look at same thing with Pete Armstrong. I mean, you know, they want him swinging a lot because that's his strength. But his timing has just been a little off. So he's fouling stuff off. He's not creating the slug he needs. So really, I think it's more just they just need to do what they're really good at. And each guy just needs to focus on that, because that's what have been making them great before. And, you know, they've shown that stretches through the season that they can hit good starting pitching. And so I think it's for them, it's just use yesterday as that kind of hopefully mental break, mental reset. And then obviously there's, you know, a really big week and a half coming up.
Megan, certainly not much done at the trade deadline, at least that's stuck around with what happened with Michael Soroka, their starting pitcher they acquired. But they do have some guys who look like they're almost ready to come back. You've got Jameson Taillon, you've got Miguel Amaya, you've got Javier Assad. What's the latest on those three players?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what updates Craig Counsell has today, because Amaya, you know, was said to be ready to come back during the Toronto series, so that obviously could be as soon as today. And with Assad and Taillon, you know, they had been kind of non-committal whether they would need an additional rehab assignment after they made their starts mid to late last week at AAA Iowa. And I wouldn't rule out if they were to either activate Assad and put him in the bullpen or activate him and send him to Iowa to keep, you know, their starting pitching depth. But Tyone seemed like he's on the verge. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back after this turn through the rotation. You know, because for them, I think it'll be interesting, you know, how much do they weigh going to a six-man rotation to help manage the workload for guys like Matthew Boyd and Cade Horton, who, you know, they're really trying to make sure they stay healthy and available through the end of the year. So they have some interesting decisions to make, you know, especially, too, because Miguel Amaya is going to require a 40-man move coming off the 60-day IL, so will Javier Assad. So there's some, you know, big-picture 40-man roster decisions that will come with those as well.
And then also Megan Benrown getting the start tonight for the Cubs. What do you anticipate out of what we could see out of him, especially in a first inning scenario against a very good Blue Jays team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest question is it's hard to know start to start kind of what version, you know, the Cubs are going to get. And I think that's the biggest question mark of, you know, why he really hasn't been able to get on the kind of role, you know, that the team thought he could this year. I think for him, obviously, the key is his fastball curveball command and showing his changeup enough that it forces them to respect it as a pitch over the course of the outing. And for him, it's just things cannot spiral, you know, once a runner gets on base or two runners get on base. It seems like, you know, that's when things start to go haywire a little bit, whether it's, you know, overthinking or just trying to focus too much on commanding, you know, his pitches. But that's when things really get out of whack. I mean, he's really been at his best where, you know, he gets into a good rhythm on the mound, and just kind of gets on a roll. So it'll be really interesting to see what version they do get. It seems like he is able to put together a couple of good outings and then sometimes has a rough one. So it'll be interesting to see, too, you know, how aggressive Council will be in going to the bullpen when you have Cade Horton and Matthew Boyd going the next couple of days, especially with Cade Horton. They've been keeping him to around 70, 75 pitches to manage his workload. So it'll be interesting. They definitely need a good outing from Benrown to set the tone.
Megan Montemuro, thanks as always for catching up with us. We appreciate it. Hope you enjoy your time in Toronto.
Thanks, Megan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Megan Montemuro joining us via the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Megan, of course, helping us out. I'm Raheem Ian Harris on 670 The Score, and we will continue talking about the Cubs and Blue Jays series. And also, I think, listen to something where, Megan's right. The Cubs should probably be focusing on themselves, but there are other teams in the National League who aren't. It's worth a listen. We'll do that all next.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Grounder to second base to JC, takes it himself. The Cardinals will hang on and win it 3-2 on a Sunday night. They take 2 out of 3 in the series and go back over 500.
Why you gotta bring up old stuff, Sunday Night Baseball? I don't need that right now. It's not funny. Okay.
It is funny.
Is it funny?
Yeah.
Is it sad?
If you don't laugh, you'll cry. What sounds better?
Yes. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. That was the Cubs Sunday Night Baseball loss call, thanks to ESPN. And they begin a new series tonight. They are taking on the Toronto Blue Jays, who just happened to be one of the best teams in baseball, leading the AL East with a 69-50 record. They are 4.5 games ahead of the Red Sox. And when we put that together with what we know that they can do as a team offensively, it is a challenge for this Cubs team. Their team average is leading baseball with a .269 average. When you consider their team OPS, it's up there at .767. That is good for third in baseball. No matter how you look at it, their offensive categories have put them in the upper echelons of what they can do as a team. Slugging, maybe that's where you get them a little bit because they're only seventh, respectively.
Only seventh.
Only.
Where are the Cubs?
They're still up there at fourth.
Yeah.
Largely because of what we saw prior to the All-Star break.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I went through a thorough, deep, deep dive on the Toronto Blue Jays last night because I wanted to see, since they've ascended and passed the Red Sox and the Yankees and gotten to the top of the East, how did this happen? How did this team become the world beaters of the American League, the team that surpassed the Detroit Tigers for best record in the American League? Mm-hmm. And they've done it with their offense, and they've done it with a bullet. This team has scored 143 runs since the All-Star break. That leads everybody in baseball. They've averaged 6.2 runs since the All-Star break. And here's the problem. The Cubs have only scored 4.2 runs per game, 4.1 runs since the All-Star break. They're 87 runs since the break, tied for 27th in baseball. That's why they're 10-11 since the All-Star break.
Cue it up, guys. Lucas Giolito, worst pitcher in baseball.
So I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, the Cubs have lost four of the last six series. The series wins came against the Orioles and the White Sox. Those two teams are last place teams. They are not good.
One is better than it used to be.
Oh, the team that's lost seven of its last eight? The White Sox? Is that the one you're referring to?
If it wasn't for the rain delay last night, we might be talking about a different game.
So here's the rub. This is the best opportunity prior to that five-game series in 4 days next week at Wrigley for the Cubs to get their offense back on track and to get a level of confidence that is sorely lacking for a team that just happens to still be not only a wild card team, but securely 17 games over 500 as we speak today. If they can find a way to take two out of three games against Toronto, now they've got some momentum. Remember, up next, the Pirates without Paul Skenes because he pitches today.
Yeah, the Pirates, and that series is at home.
Yes. And so what I'm thinking is you win this series, you prove to yourself that you're still in this against the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays are going to give you an opportunity. Here's why. Despite how good they've been since the All-Star break on offense, they have been 25th in baseball since the break in ERA as a team, 4.77. They will give you opportunities. Today's starter, Jose Berrios, going up against Ben Brown. I don't know what kind of Ben Brown you're going to get today, but I do know that Jose Berrios has given up home runs in six of his last seven starts. He's given up 20 home runs on the year. He's got a 5.71 ERA over those seven starts. But the Blue Jays are 6-1 of those games because guess what? They score 7.85 runs per contest in those seven starts.
Well, yeah, in his last start, they beat the Rockies 10-4.
So,
and Berrios is a righty, so that would indicate that would, you know, be favorable for the Cubs batters tonight.
I'm glad that you brought up the righty portion of this. Another reason Pete Crow Armstrong and the like should be able to get going here. There is no elite left-handed starting pitching in this series. You know why? Because there are no left-handed starters in this series that the Cubs have to go against. It's Berrios, it's Kevin Gausman tomorrow, and then it's Max Scherzer on Thursday. So you've got a chance here to get things going, but they need to do two things. One is hit the ball with a little bit more authority, aka get some slug going, because right now they've got no slug going. And two, they need to remember how to manufacture runs, and that might be a more important thing than getting the slug going at this portion of the season.
Undoubtedly, and I think when you consider Max Scherzer being a part of what you can see, the Dodgers beat up on these Blue Jays pretty good in the first two games, 5-1 and 9-1. So Scherzer, as we can see, at least when it comes to the Dodgers hitters, is beatable. The funny part is when you looked at what they did against the three-game set of the Dodgers, what the Blue Jays did, you know what I thought to myself? Man, and the Brewers swept these guys twice. Like every time for me, I can't help but think about what we're seeing out of the other team.
The Blue Jays have given up 35 home runs since the All-Star break. That's fourth most in baseball. They are susceptible right now. The question is, Cubs, can your mental reset of a day off give you enough of an approach advantage that you take advantage of what's right there in front of you? Because the best part about this is, you mentioned Max Scherzer, not the Max Scherzer of, 15 years ago, but 18 years in the game Max Scherzer. He gives up home runs too. The best pitcher in this series, Kevin Gausman, going tomorrow. Who's he going up against? Oh, the hottest pitcher the Cubs can throw out there, which is Cade Horton. This lines up to be an opportunity for the Cubs. and it might be their last best opportunity to make sure that next week's series against the Brewers means something.
I also want to just pay attention to this. When you think that managers don't know what's going on with other teams, when you don't know that, or you say you don't know what other guys are doing, or you're not watching the standings, Dave Roberts is one of us.
Definitely has to be some urgency, and obviously I don't think anyone's blind to the fact that the standings are the standings, and you know, so it's gotten a lot more interesting. So we got to go out there and play good baseball, but I definitely feel that our guys are starting to feel that urgency, and it's been, you know, long enough of middling baseball as far as overall team, you know, wins and losses.
Nice to hear that out of the Dodgers manager, where right now they're only a game ahead of the Padres.
But I feel like Dave Roberts isn't really worried about it because he's got that team and that roster that he's managing.
He still acknowledges it.
That's fair.
And that's the point. There is a communicated concern about maintaining their standard.
Do you feel like the Cubs aren't doing that?
I think Greg Council will tell you why they're not scoring. We heard that earlier. But when it comes to acknowledging what your division is doing, that's an important piece of it.
We heard Ian Happ do it earlier on the show. In fact, you can use the rewind feature in the Odyssey app to go back and listen to our conversation at 10:45 with one Ian Happ.
We want to give something away right now. We're tired of doing this in the 1 o'clock hour. We want to start mixing it up. So congratulations to you for listening. Caller 6 to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670. 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs against Atlanta at Wrigley Field on September 1st. It is all powered by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. You know who's a Bosch?
The Cubs?
Anthony Heron.
Oh, is he here?
He's here, and he doesn't have to wear a suit today in a billion-degree weather.
He's back there. He's not wearing a three-piece. That's why I didn't recognize him.
Anthony Heron and the Fox crew was dressed up for Sunday's game. We will ask him about that and a lot more, and maybe we'll get another mock-up of the Austin Booker pass rush moves.
I'll be the test dummy. It's fine.
That was fantastic. We'll do it all next with Anthony Heron.